This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. We're here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm Christina McManigal. I'm once again flying solo. Mike Penna and I keep missing each other, so you have to tune in next week to hear him. But I'm here in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and we want to extend a special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to everyone streaming live on our website around the world. And tonight's guest, is a good friend of mine, has currently 1,190 wins, was ranked 30th in the nation in 2013, has 18 graded stakes winners. Tonight, I'm here with Joe Rocco Jr. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Christina. Thanks for having me on the show.
Great to have you. And so where are you at nowadays?
I'm in Hot Springs, Arkansas at Oaklawn Park.
Nice. Will you be coming back to Kentucky soon, I hope?
Yep. The last week of the meet here is still kind of up in the air. I'm not sure if I'll be back for the first week of Keeneland or if I'll have to be here in Arkansas or if I might have to go there and come back here. Where the last condition book for Arkansas, for Oaklawn, just comes out this week. So everyone has to kind of wait for that to come out to make their final plans.
Sure. Well, it's a profession of gypsies, pretty much.
Yeah, you know how it is.
I do.
But yeah, Kentucky is my home base now, so we're going back there.
Very good. Well, Joe, how we typically do this show, we typically start from the beginning. We go kind of a timeline of the events that led you to where you are now. And so, I believe you were born in Florida, is that correct?
That is correct. I was born in Hollywood, Florida. My father rode for about 30 years. He retired 3.5 years ago. He broke his neck pretty bad, and he couldn't ride again after that. But, you know, the son of a jockey, we moved a lot when I was little. We lived in New Jersey for a while. I started school there, and then the rest of my school, we lived in Maryland for the most part. My dad rode in Laurel and Pimlico.
Right. So you were used to that traveling lifestyle then? You were used to that?
Yeah, when we were real little, it was like that. Once we got to, you know, my dad, like some other guys do, he sacrificed some business to settle in Maryland where we could go to school year-round and, you know, be more stable for us kids.
Sure. Your father, as you said, was a jockey. And I looked him up on Equibase. He rode consistently every single year from 1978 up until 2013, as you mentioned. And of course, his career had to come to an end because of that horrible neck injury. But he had many, many injuries along his career. And you wanted that. You wanted to ride. And tell us how you came to that decision and if you were met with any naysayers along the way.
Yeah, as long as I can remember, you know, since I was a little kid, it's the only thing I've wanted to do. I grew up going to the track with my dad in the morning and hanging out in the jocks room in the afternoons. But my mother's father, my grandfather, his name's Baden Hughes, and he trained for years back when, which is now Parks in Philadelphia Park, back when it was Liberty Bell and Keystone. He was one of the leading trainers there then. And then once I was a little older, he ran a broodmare farm in Maryland, and he had his horses at Timonium or Pimlico, and during spring break and summer vacation and winter break, I'd spend with my grandparents at the farm. help with the brood mares, and then I go in and help them at the track. And I'd be 12 years old. They let me shove real horses at Pomonium and gallop a pony around the track.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I turned like 14, 15, it got more serious. My dad was riding in Delaware. And when I was 15, I really told him, like, I really want to do this. I want to be a jockey. And he got me a job with Sam Crunk, a trainer from Delaware. And, you know, I started, walking horses, rubbing horses. And then at first he took me over to the Hacienda at Delaware Park. They have an indoor track called the Hacienda. And they have bullpens there. And he'd put me in the pen on a lunge line, on Arabians first, because Sam Cronk had a few Arabians, and started galloping horses on the training track at Delaware. They actually gave me an exercise rider's license when I was 15, with the stipulation that I could only get on horses for Sam Cronk, because it was like a family atmosphere. And it went from there. I owe Sam Cronk and his family a lot. They helped me a lot when I was real young, more or less took me into their family and treated me like I was their own family. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for them and, a lot of other people that have helped me.
That's fantastic. So you really started out riding Arabians then?
Well, galloping, yeah. I mean, I rode horses my whole life, but as far as on the racetrack, Sam Cronk, he wasn't really an Arabian trainer. He had mostly thoroughbreds, but he had, at the time, five or six Arabians, and he figured that if they were going to run off with me, I wouldn't be going that fast. And if they were going to, if I was going to fall off, I wouldn't be too far from the ground. So a safer place to start.
Exactly. How are they different from thoroughbreds, Joe? I've never had the opportunity to ride an Arabian.
A horse is a horse. Mm-hmm. They run slower times. They're built a little different, but just like thoroughbreds, the good ones are still fun to ride. A good horse is a good horse. And you can even tell with the Arabians, too.
Makes sense. Now, since racing was so much in your blood, do you remember when you first started to ride horses? Do you remember, was that kind of an easy thing for you? Did it come along just naturally?
I remember growing up, we always had a couple ponies in our front yard. An old jockey that he hasn't rode in a long time. His name was Vincent Bricelli. They called him Jimbo Bricelli. But he rode around Monmouth and in Maryland. And he used to ride, he rode Broad Brush when Broad Brush was running. Mm-hmm. And just a really smart old rider. And, I grew up just jumping on horses in his yard, and I always rode horses. Edgar Prado lived down the street, and me and his son used to yahoo their ponies up and down the fields, literally like race them through the fields and in the woods and around our houses. And my dad and Edgar would sit on the fence and drink beer and watch us and laugh. So I mean, riding the horses was always pretty natural,
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it. That's what a great story. What a great story. And again, you mentioned Samuel Cronk. And if I'm correct, I believe you won your first race for him at Tampa.
Yep. He started me out, and his whole family, his daughter rode races, his son-in-law rode races. He's a blacksmith now, and Sam rode races. Kind of old cowboy style, and I'm glad I got to learn that way, because I've feel like it helped me become a better horseman.
Sure. Now I find it a very funny story. You won your first race for him, yet mm-hmm. you were also working for him as a groom. Tell us that story.
Yeah. When I won my first race, I had to rush in the jockstrom after the race to get back to the barn, because I had to lead a horse to the paddock in the last race. and my dad rode that horse.
No.
But, they were quick to not let me get a big head.
Sounds like it. But how far you've come, and that was a good way to learn, most definitely. So
absolutely.
So where did you go from Tampa?
Well, from my whole bug year, I kind of ruined it. I moved around way too much. I got hurt a couple times, but I went from Tampa. had kind of a pit stop and rode some races in Maryland, and then I went to New York, and I was riding for Juan Soray at Aqueduct. Then I went to Monmouth Park for the summer. After Monmouth, it's kind of funny, after Monmouth Meadowlands was running, and I was only 16, and I didn't have a driver's license yet. I couldn't get one until I turned 17. And that's part of the reason that after Monmouth, I didn't go to the Meadowlands full-time because I couldn't drive myself anywhere. And my agent wasn't willing to do it all the time. My mom, on dark days, either my mom or my sister would come pick me up and drive me to other tracks for me to go ride, or I'd get rides with other jockeys. So after Monmouth, I went to Maryland, more because I didn't have a driver's license. And then once I was able to get a driver's license, I went back up to New York for the winter time and finished my bug out there.
Wow, that's a dedicated family there. But
yeah, I was very blessed. I had a lot of support.
Definitely, definitely. And so you're so young at this time. You're riding, you're winning. And like you said, in those days, I remember reading, you said you were too impulsive. And did you just mean as far as moving around a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if I'd have a bad month, instead of thinking about what I could work on to make it better where I was at, I was just looking at where I could go and, you know, the next opportunity, you know?
Right. Right. Moving on.
Kind of, yeah, just young and, you know, but everything happens for a reason. You know, I'm a strong believer in that. And I don't think I'd be here today if I didn't, you know, make the decisions I did and kind of went through what I did.
I agree completely. And we've all been young and dumb at some time, of course.
Oh, yeah.
So you married your wife, Jamie, a trainer, and I'm sure you two met at the track. So tell us how you two met.
Yes. At Colonial Downs in Virginia, I was riding in Maryland. We go down to the Colonial meet, and she had a string of horses there. When I met her, she trained. She's from, my wife's from Northern California. Her dad is a trainer. His name's Lonnie Arterburn. Mm-hmm. And she was an assistant for her dad in California. And then she started her own hauling business. And her dad moved from the West Coast and got a farm in Ocala. And then from there, like, you know, she moves out here and her sister, who is a jockey now, and she trains her own horses. Her name's Brittany Arterburn. She was wanting to just start riding in Virginia then, and my wife was training the horses. I met her down there, and we went out on a couple of dates. And from there, they weren't supposed to come to Laurel after that meet. But, me and Jamie kind of fell in love. She talked her dad into sending the horses to Maryland, and we've been together ever since.
The rest is history.
Yeah. Right.
And go ahead.
I was going to say her sister started riding down there, and she went to Maryland and rode with the Bug, and she still rides now.
You are both from horse racing families, sounds like it. And you have two handsome young boys, I hear.
Yes. My older son's name is Brody, 6 years old, and my older boy's name is Luke, and he's 3.
Nice, nice. And are they as enthusiastic for racing as you are?
Yeah, you know, when the older one was younger, he liked to ride more. Now he has if you pick him up to put him on a horse, he screams that he's scared of heights. the younger one still, he loves to ride. But, you know, they like going to the track, and, you know, it's an exciting job. It really is. I'm blessed to grow up in it and, you know, for my kids to experience it as well.
Exactly. I'm scared of heights too, Joe. I still like to sit on a horse, but you know.
A horse just isn't too high to scare you. That's
exactly.
Funny.
Exactly. But I'm going to fast forward a little bit here. Let's go back to 2003, the year you had your first stakes win. You rode House Party to a victory for the late trainer Alan Jerkins, who just recently passed away. So tell our listeners, in memory of him, what he was like to ride for and what kind of a horseman he was.
It meant a little bit more to me to win my first stake race for Alan Jerkins because my father, my dad, my grandfather on my father's side, my dad's from Brooklyn. He galloped horses for Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, my grandfather on my dad's side, when he was younger in New York. But other than that, he really wasn't so much a racetracker. And my dad, when he was 16, he was the smallest one out of all his brothers and sisters. My grandfather just said, "You're the smallest one. You're going to be a jockey." Hmm. And meanwhile, my dad had never even really seen a horse. He grew up in Brooklyn. So my grandfather took him to Belmont and got my dad a job with Alan Jerkins. And my dad worked for Alan Jerkins for 4 years. After 4 years, he rode his first race, but, you know, started at the bottom, a hot walker, a groom, exercise rider, and moved up. So, I mean, it meant more to me just for what Alan Jerkins did for my father. And, you know, for him to put me on my first stake winner, it felt like the stars aligned, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
All the stories my dad had about Alan, you know, when he was young, and they'd have to go play football on the turf course when they were done feeding at night, and just the horseman that he was, just amazing. I'm blessed to have been around him in Florida the last few years.
Definitely, definitely. And what kind of a horseman was he? What did he do differently from others?
It seemed like everything. There, I mean, you'd see the chief do things that, you know, other people wouldn't think to do, you know, like he'd breeze a horse through the stretch a quarter of a mile the day that it ran with the pony alongside of it. Like, the pony would never let go of it. The pony would breeze next to the horse, you know, things like that, you know, if anyone else did it, you'd scratch your head, but the chief did it. So you were like, well, the chief's doing his thing.
That is too,
you know,
funny.
And they'd show up in the afternoon.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And that is too funny. So he was somewhat of a mentor to you, most especially your father. What other mentors do you feel like really helped you early on in your career?
You know, I was really fortunate that my dad rode for so long, and I grew up in the jockstrom, so... You know, all the jockeys that were friends with my dad from over the years when I, you know, first started riding, they all helped me. I had a lot of help. Like I said, Jimbo Bracciali, he helped me a lot, you know, learn how to be a race rider. And then, you know, there was Mark Johnston. He rode in Maryland when I was there, Mario Pino. At Monmouth Park, there was a jockey, Jose Martinez Jr. He took me under my wing and really helped me with how I look on the horse now. I credit him a lot to it, because the little pointers that he gave me then just, you know, kind of always stuck with me. But I had a lot of help. I've been very fortunate.
You mentioned how he helped you look good on a horse. And Joe, just out of curiosity, how tall are you?
I'm about 5'8".
That's what I thought. For us taller riders,
I was gonna say you're about that too.
I'm 5'6", so yeah, a little shorter, but I found it difficult, more difficult to look good on a horse, to tuck in and to look good on a horse.
I think somewhat, but I think that us tall riders like us have it easier than the really, really short guys.
Yes.
Because they just, You know, no matter what, most of them just kind of look like a ball on a horse. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Besides,
no, it's true.
There's some, like Javier Castellano, he looks really good on a horse for a real short guy, I think. Because I think it's harder for them. At least when we fold up, we can get flatter. But yes, you know, it takes a while to, you know, to learn how to tuck all the body parts up and get flat.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and I guess anyone of any height, it's not the easiest thing to do, to tuck up and look good on a horse. But that's something that it takes a lot of preparation and looking at films. And did you do a lot of that when you were starting out, watched a lot of your races and kind of made net mental notes of what to fix next time?
Yeah, for sure. I spent a lot of time on the back of an equisizer. Mm-hmm. When I had the bug, I made an equisizer. I made one myself, and it worked great. And every night, my dad would make me watch the replays from Gulfstream, and I'd ride each race on the equisizer to it. But I'd pick out one jockey each race and watch them from the start to the finish, and not just, you know, how he looked on the horse or what, but the decisions that he made through the race, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because I think that's really how you win races, is the decisions that you make. You know, your strength and the finishing, that might make up inches or a foot, but really you win races with your mind, you know?
Exactly. How you have to get there to be able to finish. But I'm going to fast forward a little bit here to July of 2011. It all came together for you, Joe. It all that practice, all the preparation, all of the studying films, and you did something I have never heard of or witnessed. You won with 6 of 7 mounts at Delaware Park on July 27th, 2011, equaling the most wins by a rider there on a single card. The last time that had been accomplished was 1998, so a record that stood for some time. And needless to say, you were the leading rider at Delaware Park that year. I don't think anyone had a chance after that day to catch you. But tell us about that.
It was really cool. It was cool because I won them all in a row. I won 6 in a row that day. And I was only on 7, and I had 2 races off until the last one ran. And the horse was like 15-1 in the program, and I went off 3-1. And I didn't think the horse could win looking at the race. But, you know, obviously I wanted it to. I tried my best, but the horse didn't win. It was just a really cool day because my wife, my kids were at the track. My one son was at the track. My wife was pregnant with our younger son. But my mom, my dad was at the track, my sisters, my nieces, my nephews. So it was a really cool day.
Wow, it was a...
You know, and I got to win for a few trainers that I really, really liked that day. Just, you know, it was cool. Someone asked me at the end of the day how I felt. I said, I'm tired. Like, how do you think I feel?
You just won 6 races. Come on. Go ahead.
I was going to say my brother-in-law's name is Jerome Doro. He's the racing secretary at Delaware Park. At this time, he was the assistant racing secretary there. But he went with me. We had to jump in the car that night and drive to Saratoga because I had to ride there the next day.
Wow.
And a bunch of jockeys ran out into the parking lot with some shaving cream and toilet paper and crap to mess up my truck. And I just happened to not park where I normally park that day, and I parked in the other side of the parking lot, and they couldn't find my truck. So they screwed up Abel Castellanos just because they had all the stuff in the parking lot, and they figured while they were there, they didn't want to waste it.
What are the chances of that? You lucked out there.
Yeah.
So you had to drive to Saratoga after that big day. There's no celebrating, nothing like that. It's a lot of tough work. You have to ship everywhere, and you don't always get to...
Yeah, you know. The drive up to Saratoga is a lot easier after you win 6 races, though.
Well, sure it is. Sure it is.
And I'm really blessed. You know, I my brother-in-law, Jed, like I said, he drove me up there. You know, I'm blessed to have a lot of good people in my corner to help me out.
Sure you are. It's almost impossible to do it all on your own power after.
Yeah, it's taxing.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And especially when, again, we're tall. And so, you know, the trying to keep your weight down is tough, and trying to deal with all of that is tiring. And do you have to worry about that a lot, Joe?
Yeah, well, you know, as you know, I've been riding 16 years now. That is just another part of the job, you know. But if you don't look at it like that, it can be hard. But, well, all right, before our interview today, I went jogging for 3 miles because I wanted to sweat before I did the interview. That way the rest of the day I could do what I wanted. You know, even every day I don't ride, I got to take, you know, an hour and a half out of the day to put on sweat clothes and either go to the gym, or if it's hot enough outside, go running, and just to maintain my weight at a, you know, so I don't, so there's never a day where I have to struggle and lose too much weight. I'd rather maintain it and just keep, you know, try to get down to the same weight every day and keep it maintained that way.
Exactly. And it really is, as you said, easier to deal with it when it's just part of the job. If you eat too much, you don't get a chance to ride or ride mounts back or however that would happen. But it is. I have to say, I enjoy eating now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But
I'm sure.
you also said when I called you the other day, you mentioned something about the gym, and do you work out often?
Yeah, every day I don't ride, I work out in some capacity. You know, whether it's either just go running or I do go to the gym. Normally, I'd rather just work, you know, go running, or at home in Kentucky, I have a punching bag in the garage. I jump rope. I hit the bag and, you know, do yard work, stuff like that to sweat and lose weight on the dark days. But, you know, more or less just got to stay active.
Exactly. Maintain that fitness, maintain that weight. And you continue to bounce around from track to track a bit. Well, especially after Delaware, you're definitely a gypsy. And, so after Delaware, where did you go?
Well, after Delaware, the year before I was leading rider in Delaware, I came to Oakland for the year. And, after I was leading rider in Delaware, we, had an opportunity to go to Gulfstream. So we went down there and we had a really good winter. The next year we came back up to Delaware, and my agent and I, we decided to try and concentrate on Monmouth a little bit more than Delaware. And that summer, you know, I did okay. I did good in both places, but it didn't work out quite as good as I would have liked to. I was honestly spread a little bit too thin, and, you know, it didn't go as good as I would have liked. So by the time fall time came around, and the grass ended up all there, my business wasn't that great. Michael Matz asked me to go to Keeneland for the meet, and I ended up going there for him. I hooked up with an agent in Kentucky. I did pretty good. I stayed for the Churchill meet, and I did really well. So since then, we went to Florida for the last two winters until this year, and we made Kentucky home for the rest of the year.
Nice, Joe. Where would you say would be your favorite track?
My favorite track? I'd have to say Keeneland.
Keeneland. I have to say I agree with you, Joe. We're going to go to a commercial break here soon. We'll continue our visit with jockey Joe Rocco Jr., if I can say it, after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Hello, this is Kayla Strah, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick Four. You hear him on HRRN Radio. Now get his personal selections directly from him at his new site, PopeJude.com. Every analysis sheet at PopeJude.com has his personal selections and insights. Each page is a handicapping lesson packed with years of racing knowledge, coupled with insider information gleaned from the pontiff's countless connections in thoroughbred racing. Whether you're looking for another set of eyes on the past performances or inspired racing analysis to assault the windows, PopeJude.com is the site for you.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage. Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Rhea Antonia from the outside has the lead. Close Hatches is still there, but needs to find more. And here comes Don't Tell Sophia with a big rally on the outside. Don't Tell Sophia had lost contact with the field on the backstretch, and she has taken the lead in the final furlong of the Judmont Spinster. Close Hatches backs up to fourth. Don't Tell Sophia and Joe Rocco Jr. to take it. Rhea Antonia second. Molly Morgan came on to get third in 1:49 4/5 seconds.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McManigle here, joined tonight by jockey Joe Rocco Jr. And you just heard Don't Tell Sophia winning the Grade 1 2014 Judmont Spinster Stakes at Keeneland. Joe, you just mentioned Keeneland is your favorite track. How was that experience?
That was just awesome. It really was. Then there, she's a lot of fun to ride, and she ran unbelievable that day. My parents were visiting me that day. That kind of made it a little more special. My mom got to get in the win picture, and it got us a trip to the Breeders' Cup. She didn't win. She ran second, but, she ran an awesome race. That was just a great day. It really was.
Most definitely, and I know Mike and I were up in the press box at Keeneland that day watching the race live, and I have to say that when I rode horses that would come from out of the clouds like that and make that big run, not that I ever rode a horse like her, but when they make that big run down the stretch, such a rush.
Yeah, that's the favorite feeling I get from riding races is when I'm last. When I'm still last, and I know that when I want, I'm going to pass everybody in front of me. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time. Just when you push the button. That's my favorite feeling that I get.
I completely agree.
And, she lets me get that feeling.
No, she walked all over them, and she made the competition look like they were standing still. And what a horse.
Yeah. She's like a big train when she gets going. That's the only bad thing about Sophie is that she's so big, and that her momentum when she gets going is so great that you really have no choice but to go around, you know.
Mm-hmm. You can't get stopped.
Because unless the field's real strung out and you can pick your way through them, if you got to stop her a little bit, she's not getting going again.
Makes sense, and. So she took you to the Breeders' Cup, and she ran a huge race there, got up for second by a nose. And how was it like going to the Breeders' Cup?
It was really cool. It was the second Breeders' Cup race I ever rode. I rode a juvenile fillies in 2009, I want to say. Didn't run any good. This time I had a much better shot, I'd say. It was a lot of fun. My wife and my kids went out there for the 3 days. My wife's from California, so we got to visit with some of her family while we were there. and the big mare showed up and ran a great race. You know, obviously I wish we could have won. But I'm blessed. I feel blessed to have the opportunity to ride such great horses like her.
Of course, that's what keeps you going, to get a horse like that. And I have to say, I chuckle when I hear you say it was cool, it was awesome, and such understatements, I think, to be able to have those kind of opportunities. And in January of 2013, you had another really big, cool, and awesome moment with your 1,000th career victory aboard Rustler Hustler.
Yes. You know, it's funny that I won my 1,000th race, and at Gulfstream, I had more people ask me that day, "That's all you've won?" That it kind of ruined it for me a little bit. You know what I mean? Because I've been riding for a while. It took me a while to win my 1,000th race. I've been hurt a lot. And out of the 16 years I've been riding, I've ridden a total of, like, I want to say 13 years. But, it took me a while to get there. Obviously I'm proud to do it. My grandparents was, it's funny that I kind of have a story that this person or that person was there at each of these big things. But my grandparents were there at the time. So it was cool that they were there to kind of join in the celebration, you know?
Of course. And so give us a quick rundown of some of those horrible injuries you've had.
I broke 5 vertebrae in my back in a spill at Colonial. I broke 3 vertebrae or 2 vertebrae in my neck. I broke my shoulder. I broke ribs. I broke every finger on both my hands. I broke the growth plate in my thumb on my right hand. I broke an ankle. That was when I was a kid riding pony. Like most jocks, we got a list of them.
Oh yeah, it's. I said quick rundown. I guess it's not too quick to give a list of all of those. And so, was there ever a moment when you wondered, you know, will I get out there and do it again, or did you always, were you like most of us who just couldn't wait to get back out there on a horse?
Yeah, no, there's never really been a time that I've thought about doing something else. At least not from injury. I think that if anything, when you come back from an injury, you're inspired. You're hungry. You've been so long without riding a race. It makes you appreciate getting back out there, being able to do it again. You see some of these guys that, like Mike Strait, you know, he rode for 6 months and now he's in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. No matter how bad it is, you just got to look at it as the angle is that you're lucky and that you're blessed that you're still able to do it.
Exactly. I went to school with Mike, and such a great person he is. He never he's always in a good mood, and how very fortunate we all are to be alive and to be able to do what we want to do. It is inspiring. That was a very good, very good word to use there, because it is. It really is.
Yeah.
And
it's about perspective, I think.
Exactly. Most definitely. And so I'm gonna go back to Keeneland really quickly. Keeneland, of course, I live here in Lexington, Kentucky, and Keeneland kind of seems like home to me too, and it's a race track filled with history and class, and because of the short meets, we go out there and we see big crowds and everyone's having a good time. And we recently saw the addition of a dirt service, which replaced the old poly track. Describe to our listeners the difference between the services and what racing strategies do you use differently?
Keeneland, I'd say, was the first, if not would say, Keeneland, when I went to Kentucky when it was Polytrack, was the first Polytrack racetrack that I rode like a whole meet at. And that was 4 years ago. So my my Polytrack experience isn't very vast. And, you know, when I was there and it was Polytrack, and you'd hear people say about, you know, how you ride it differently and how you, and there wasn't too much that I did differently. You know, people say you're supposed to got to ride it like a grass course. You know, and I love to ride the grass. I try to ride every horse how they like to run, not so much in a certain style, but, I guess maybe I'm a little more patient on Polytrack, and, you wait a little more. A lot of times the outside's a little bit better. The new dirt track, Keeneland always used to be very speed favoring when it was dirt before. So when they put the dirt back on, some people thought that it would be more like that. It seemed to be pretty fair last year. I like the surface. And I'm very excited they did that way. The Breeders' Cup's there. I'm excited for the Breeders' Cup to be at my favorite track.
Exactly. That's going to be big. That's going to be big. That's going to make Lexington, Kentucky, the place to be.
Yes, for sure.
Most definitely.
You know, sometimes after the races on a Thursday, it'll take 45 minutes to get out of the parking lot. So that place is going to be crazy.
You might as well just stay there, Joe. Just stay in the jocks room.
Well, actually, we bought a camper to take to Saratoga 2 years ago, the first year we went up there. And we went back last year. We brought the camper back. But I was going to ask if I could bring it to the backside. That way I could just stay in the camper for the Breeders' Cup weekend and not have to drive any, not have to go home.
That is a really good idea.
Yeah.
You should, because it will.
I'm going to try to. I figured that, my kids are 6 and 3, so they have a time limit on how good they are at the races and about how long they're going to want to sit for. So, at least she could take them over there and then just come to the races when she wants. That'd be all right.
That is an excellent idea. Hopefully they let you. Hopefully they will.
Yes.
You don't have to endure the long, long waiting and drive back to Louisville anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So when did you move to Louisville?
Well, let's see. It was the fall of 2011 was my first meet at Keeneland. And then it was the next spring, so spring of 2012.
Nice. And after that, in the year 2013, you had the best year of your career. Your earnings in 2013 were the best you've had at $6,090,551. You were ranked 30th in the nation. And your highlights included 19 stakes wins, topped by the Ogden Phipps Handicap at Belmont Park, victory with Tiz Miz Sue. And tell us about the victory with Tiz Miz Sue.
That was just an awesome day. I rode Tiz Miz Sue for several years leading up to that race. I've gotten to be friends with her trainer, Steve Hobby. He's a tremendous horseman and an even better person. Tiz Miz Sue's owners, Mrs. Ricks, and her grandson and their whole family, just great people. So, when you get to be close with the people around the horse and, their barn, the grooms, the hot walkers, exercise riders, you just feel more of like part of the team on it. So to win my first grade one on Tiz Miz Sue there, it was like a dream come true. It was awesome. And that mare, I loved that mare, and she so deserved it. I was so happy that she got a grade one win. It put her over $1 million, and she never ran again. She retired off that race.
Wow. That's fantastic. And I've been asked funny questions at times, people who don't know a lot about horse racing, like, oh, do you ride the same horse every race and things like that. But what some people maybe don't know is that we do. We do get attached to the horses that we consistently ride, and to some degree anyway. And a horse like that you rode for so much before, and to hit such a big milestone with that had to mean a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, the people that surrounded the horse too are such great people that it makes it seem that much, makes it mean that much more.
Of course. And not only did you have that grade one victory there. But you also won the Prioress at Saratoga on Lighthouse Bay.
Yeah, that was my first summer that we went to Saratoga, and I can't believe how good we did. I won 15 races. I won 5 stakes. I won the George Weaver. It was last minute. I didn't even have a call in the race. And last minute, George needed a rider. He threw me on the horse. In the paddock, the owner said, we bred her. We own the mare. She's a homebred. It'd be great if you get third. It'd be great to have some black type on the mare. And she won the race. It was a great summer.
Wow. Nice surprise, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Didn't expect that one. And you actually had another surprise in 2014 when you were named on Vince Ramos for Todd Pletcher in the Kentucky Derby.
Yes. Yes. Twin Creeks Racing put me on the first Derby ride. It was amazing. I'll forever be grateful to the owners and Todd Pletcher for giving me the opportunity.
What was it like to be there for that when they played, my old Kentucky home, and you do consider Kentucky home, and you're there and the crowds are there, and just that had to be an overwhelming feeling.
Yeah, the whole city kind of gets Derby fever. It's kind of crazy. Living there, the principal of my son's in kindergarten, the principal of a school called me and wished me good luck in the Derby. It was just kind of weird, it doesn't really happen in other places. everyone gets to be a part of it, for a long time I'm on the outside looking into the Derby, and just to be a part of it is amazing.
Well, it doesn't happen in other places, but it probably doesn't happen to many people either. Oh, good luck in the Derby,
it's really cool, but honestly, the people that live in Louisville and the surrounding area, they embrace, it's kind of like hot springs here in Arkansas. At Oakland is the same way. They really embrace horse racing, and it feels good because you don't see that everywhere.
You're exactly right, and you mentioned that to me before, and you said that the crowds come out there at Oaklawn, and you said something funny that even you'll be out at a restaurant and some person you've never met will offer to buy you dinner.
Yeah, it's funny. It's happened to my wife and I about 3 times here. One time the guy paid for our dinner and didn't even say a word to us. When we went to pay, our waitress said that, no, the guy that was sitting over there paid for it. The man already left. I couldn't even say thank you. But they just said, he said to say good luck this meet and be safe.
Wow.
Just really good people.
I have never been there. I did not know that. And you also said when you want to rent an apartment or anything like that, that people just, oh, yeah, you don't need to leave a security deposit. What are you talking about?
Yeah, when they find out that you're with the racetrack or you're a jockey, they just welcome you with open arms.
It's fantastic.
It's a different way of life out here. It's nice.
Of course, of course. And what's the weather like out there, Joe?
Well, the beginning of the meet in Oakland's a bit iffy. The racetrack, if you don't know, the racetrack is actually in Hot Springs National Park. And they have the natural hot springs that, the water comes up, and they have the bathhouses downtown. But since the racetrack sits in that national park, they can't put any chemicals or salt on the racetrack to keep it from freezing like they do on other racetracks.
Really?
So because of that, they're subject to the weather. They just, if it's below freezing and the track freezes up, they have to wait for it to warm up or the sun to come out to unthaw the racetrack. Where in other places, they can use some science to get it to where they can train on it. So when, January, early February, it's a little iffy here and they might miss some training, but today it's 77 degrees outside and sunny. It's beautiful.
Wow. But that's very interesting. I, as I said, I've never been there, one of the few tracks I have not been to, and I did not know. That's very interesting about how they can't even put salt down, but thankfully it's nice there now.
Yes, yes. They I think we missed 8 or 9 racing days this year because of the weather, and it normally isn't that bad here. I think the last couple of years, I think 3 years up till now, they've only missed 2 days total. But, you know, this year was just a bad year. But this place is the only place I've been at that sometimes you'll have to breeze horses at 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Because at the beginning of the meet, and then even once it starts on dark days, if it's too cold to open the track up, you know, at the normal time, then they'll wait until 10, sometimes 11 or 12 o'clock, and they'll just start the training then.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, if it's too cold, some days they'll just wait till it warms up, and the sun can hit the track and thaw stuff out. And, you know, my agents text me sometimes that I have 4 degrees starting at 1 o'clock.
Don't make any plans for the day, because you never know.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's too funny. I had no idea. I've never done that. I've never breezed a horse at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's a little different, but you know, at least when it's really cold out, you don't have to go get on horses here.
Well, exactly. Always warm, always warm. And Joe, tell me, you've mentioned your agent a few times, and agents are a big part of a jockey's career of handling their business. And so give our listeners a brief kind of job description of what an agent does.
All right. An agent, when you think of an agent, most people probably think of like a Hollywood agent, like an actor's agent or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not too far off of that, I guess, but that, you know, they more or less represent us. They get up in the morning, they go around, they see all the trainers that we ride for, and you know, they tell them about what races, the trainers tell them what races they're going to want to run in, that they want us to ride their horses in, and our agents will, you know, several trainers might want us for the same race, so it's up to our agent to try and find the better horse in that race for us to ride, so we have a better chance to win the race. And at the same time, keep both them trainers happy so that we can ride for both of them in the future. You know, so they more or less handle our business, try to keep everyone happy. They line up our workers for us in the morning, the horses that we go get on to exercise for the trainers. And more or less, keep our business in order.
Jockey Joe Rocco Jr. joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, what career goals are you still working towards?
My career goals are someday to be able to retire and do what I want.
Hey.
No, my career goals are, obviously, like every other jockey, I want to win the Derby. I want to win Breeders' Cup races. You know, I want to win the Dubai World Cup. Like everyone. But at the same time, you know, since I've had kids, I've learned that, you know, I just want to be happy and do a good job and ride for trainers that I enjoy riding for and ride horses that I enjoy riding and just be the best that I can every day, you know, go out there with a good outlook every day and just get all I can. I can do that for the rest of my career, then I'll be happy with what I did.
As you should be, and you do have to have a really good attitude consistently. It's an up and down game, and if you let it bother you, it can really get you down. How do you
Absolutely.
Handle that, Joe?
My wife. Plain and simple. I wouldn't be where I was today had I not met my wife. I'll say point blank, you know. They say behind every good man stands a good woman, and it ain't no different here. I don't know. Since I met my wife, she just helps me see things in the right light, I suppose I should say.
Keeps you grounded.
You know, I think it's important to have someone behind you that supports you, and I'm blessed to have, you know, the best person that I could ever hope for.
That's fantastic. As I said before, it's so important to have people behind you and supporting you, and it's an incredibly tough profession to get involved with. It's really hard, but you enjoy it. And if you had not chosen to ride, however, what would you have done?
I'd probably be some sort of carpenter, to tell you the truth. I really like to build stuff.
Really?
Or a landscaper. In Kentucky at our house, I got a big garden. My wife and I, both of us, we like to build stuff and make things. We're pretty handy. So, probably do something like that.
Makes sense. And if someone asked you how and what it takes to become a rider, what would you tell them?
That's a tough one. What it takes to become a rider?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You got to be strong mentally, really. You know, I think that's the most important thing is, like anything, mind over matter. The mind tires before the body. If you can stay strong mentally in this game, it helps you more than anything.
That's exactly right.
Confidence goes a long way in with our job, being a jockey. But on the same note, confidence with us is very fragile. It goes from race to race. You could win four in a row and then ride a bad race, and your confidence is gone, you know?
Exactly.
So, if you keep your confidence up and positive outlook, you know, good things can happen.
So take me through a typical day in the life of Joe Rocco Jr.
A typical day?
Yes.
depending on workers and what track I'm at, I get up between 5:30 and 6:30 in the morning. If there's a Dunkin' Donuts close to me, I will definitely go to that and get coffee, and then I'll go to the racetrack. Walk around, socialize, see trainers. If I have horses of breeze, I get on horses. Usually if I have time to, I'll go home in between the morning work and the races and, maybe eat an egg sandwich with the kids if they're home from school and, rest up a little bit and go to the jocks room or go to the gym before I go to the jocks room to work out and sweat, or I go to the jocks room and get in the hot box for a little bit. Then get out of the hot box, stretch, drink some water, and get to work.
Busy day. That's so funny.
Yeah.
I have Dunkin' Donuts coffee sitting right in front of me, and I have to have my Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's not always everywhere.
That's funny. Well, listen, in Hot Springs, there wasn't a Dunkin' Donuts at all until last year. They finally put one in. So that was when I agreed to come back to Oakland for the winter, was when they put a Dunkin' Donuts in.
I would be the same way. Has to be one. There's two in Lexington, so when you come to Keeneland and all that, there's one in Louisville.
Yeah.
You're good.
Yeah. <That's> funny.
So, Joe, real quick, before we wrap up, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
In 5 years? Honestly, I'd like to stay on the circuit that we're doing right now. Have, more or less Kentucky be my main base. Besides 7 weeks in the summer, go to Saratoga and come to Oakland in the winter. The reason we came to Oakland this winter instead of Gulfstream in years past is because I want to make Kentucky home, and I feel I bring more business back to Kentucky from Oakland than I do from Florida. And if I keep going to Miami in the winter, eventually I'm going to have to commit to going to New York because that's where a lot of that business goes. So 5 years, I'd like to be doing Kentucky, Oakland, Saratoga.
Joe,
hopefully winning a lot of races.
There we go. Exactly. You said it. We are all out of time tonight. That hour flew by. Joe, thanks so much for being here with us.
No problem, Christina. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much, Joe. If you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out the podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm Christina McManigal. Thanks for listening.